This program is brought to you by RTS on iTunes U from the Distance Education Department of Reformed Theological Seminary. For more information on RTS degrees and programs, please visit us at www.rts.edu or call 1-855-854-6920.
I want to talk about his stages on life's way. There's a book that he wrote by that title, but he deals with these stages in other books as well. And he says that basically each of these stages is what we would call today a lifestyle. It's a way of living, and as part of that way of living, it's a way of thinking too. So you find yourself in one lifestyle. How do you change into another lifestyle? Well, that's not an easy thing to do. He distinguishes three of these lifestyles or stages, the aesthetic stage, the ethical stage, and the religious stage, and then he divides the religious stage into two, religion A and religion B. The aesthetic stage is uncommitted, irresponsible, dedicated to pure enjoyment, and therefore entirely selfish. You probably had a roommate in college like this, huh? No, I'm just kidding. Probably you wouldn't, but some of us did. But there are an awful lot of footloose folks in the world, and a lot of them are on college campuses. A lot of them just don't know what they're doing. A lot of them have graduated from college, and they're still living in their parents' basement, and they have no idea what they're going to do for a living. But they're pretty sure they want to have some fun. So they're uncommitted. They're irresponsible. They're easily bored. And if you say, you know, you really ought to take a stand for this, maybe a political principle, maybe religious faith, something like that, you need to take a stand on principle, they'll say, no, that's boring. That restricts me. That keeps me from doing what I want to do. Sometimes these folks are kind of charming, but they can become diabolical, manipulative in wanting to get their way all the time. But this way of life cannot be ultimately satisfying. People sometimes live this way for many, many years, but there is a tendency for people to get tired of it, to grow weary, to be full of self-disgust, to say to themselves, is this all there is in life? Going from one party to another one, getting drunk every night, is this all that life offers me? And it leads to a kind of despair. The problem here, says Kierkegaard, is that people like this are unwilling to choose a way of life. They're simply moving from moment to moment. But have they made a choice? Simply by refusing to make a choice. At any rate, it's difficult to turn this around. But there is another way to live, says Kierkegaard. There is the ethical stage. Ethical stage is Kantian ethics, as he understands it. Kant taught that ethics is absolute obedience to the moral law. And so it involves mutual obligation. It involves treating you the way I'd like you to treat me, treating you the way I'd like to treat everybody in the world. So really there's something universal about it, a life of obligation for everybody. You don't follow your individual inclinations. In this sense, it's the opposite of the aesthetic stage. This is something universal for everybody. Interestingly, the ethical stage, even though it's opposite to the aesthetic stage in some ways, in other ways it fulfills the aesthetic stage. It incorporates the aesthetic stage. Because after all, what is more fun than living a life of commitment? I mean, once you get the hang of it, at least, isn't it wonderful to live for a great cause? How many movies have been dedicated to people getting together and giving up their miscellaneous pleasures for a great cause? I mean, isn't that something that doesn't that fulfill? So in a kind of paradoxical way, the ethical stage is against the aesthetic, but it also fulfills the aesthetic. And that, frankly, and Kierkegaard's anti-Hegel, but frankly, this begins to sound a little bit like Hegel, because Hegel thought that when you move from one stage to another, the higher stage negates the lower stage, but the higher stage also fulfills the lower stage. Remember the three meanings of Aufheben, to preserve, cancel, and fulfill. Well, so in the ethical stage, you find your duties based on your station in society. However, there's frustration here, just as there was frustration in the aesthetic stage. There's frustration in the ethical, and in the ethical stage, the frustration is that we don't have the power to keep the moral law. We try so hard, but we can't do it. And isn't that what the New Testament tells us? Isn't that what your preacher tells you every Sunday? You don't have the power in yourself to do this. So, but there's an alternative, okay? There's another lifestyle that meets that need, and that is religion, okay? And religion gets us talking about the grace of God. It gets us talking about God's provision for us. There is, first of all, religion A, however. And you have to distinguish between one kind of religion and another. They're not equally okay. Religion A is the kind of religion that you find in the Danish state church. And this includes all forms of religion that are formalized and fall short of true faith. And this includes paganism, but it also includes some forms of Christianity. And Kierkegaard, comes pretty close to equalizing formal Christianity with paganism. There's a very controversial section in his concluding Unscientific Postscript where he says that the pagan who prays with passion to a false god, and the formal Lutheran who prays to the true God without any passion are equal in a way. That's a little bit, I mean, Kierkegaard has been criticized for saying that there's really no distinction between a false god and a true God. That's not what he's saying. He makes very clear that in his view the pagan is praying to a false god, and the Lutheran is praying to a true God. But he is, equalizing these events. He's saying that this passionless prayer gets you no farther than paganism. So that's religion A. Trying to relate to God, trying to absolve your guilt based on your own resources, recognition of the divine, but you have an essentially passive relationship to him. You don't decide, you don't choose. Characteristics of religion A include resignation, where you renounce your own relative goals, suffering, sorrow over this renunciation, recognizing the need of transformation, feeling of guilt. You recognize that you have a partially severed fellowship with the unknown God, and passive participation in ceremonies, ordinances, and religious duties, as in the Danish state church. But then there's an alternative to that, and here comes the best alternative. This is religion B, which is true Christianity governed by faith alone. Unlike religion A, religion B comes at God's initiative. God establishes it by entering in to history. Kierkegaard is very interested in what he calls the qualitative distinction between time and eternity, and God, who is eternal, now breaks through that distinction to come into history through the incarnation of Jesus Christ. This happens, this is a God thing entirely. This is not something that we can work up. This is his initiative establishing a relationship with men, and it's impossible for us to understand how this can happen. How can the eternal enter time? This is what God has decided to do. The object is what he calls the absurd, the absolute paradox, the eternal entering time. I don't think that Kierkegaard believed that this was a real logical contradiction. I think that he would have said this is an apparent contradiction. But it is, there's something mysterious about it. It's eternal truth relating to an existing individual. Okay, so we get the individual here. It's not resolved in a higher synthesis as in Hegel. Goes beyond religion A, not just going beyond the evidence as religious A does, but its belief in something which itself is paradoxical, even transcends the moral law, which is the big thing in the ethical stage. This is what he calls a teleological suspension of ethics. There's a book he wrote called Fear and Trembling, where he talks about Abraham offering his son Isaac on the basis of a divine command. Well, that divine command, says Kierkegaard, went against God's own ethical standards. And so Kierkegaard says it amounts to a teleological suspension of the ethical. And so religion is something higher than ethics. It's this personal relationship with God. Now, I don't agree with his analysis there. I think that God was not violating the principles of ethics, but God does intervene. And of course, remember, Abraham never does actually sacrifice Isaac. God prevented him from doing that. So there's nothing about the passage in Genesis 22 that violates the law of God. But anyway, there is something remarkable that happens there. It's God's personal relationship with Abraham, not Abraham's previous understanding of what's right and wrong. It's that personal individual relationship that makes the difference. Religion B is not a doctrine, but an existence communication by which we are actually transformed. It contains a sense of sin, which cannot be explained, but only experienced. How can an innocent person fall into sin? Kierkegaard does not accept the historicity of Genesis 3. He believes that this is mainly a description of the choices that everybody makes. But he's quick to stress that everything in religion B is personal. And here he's a little bit like the Richelians and Hermann especially. There's a personalism about it. It's my rebellion against the personal God. How do we live? Being forgiven this way. We live in the spirit, not by formal religion. We can give reasons for our choices, but we can't await all the facts to come in, all the research to be done. In this kind of teaching, the person of the teaching is important to the learning of it, especially his willingness to die for what he believes. Religion B combines the immediacy of the aesthetic sphere with the decisive choice of the ethical sphere. So it's a little bit Hegelian here, even though Kierkegaard renounces Hegel. In religion B, you have a decisive choice. But you also have an immediacy, an immediate relationship with God. You get immense pleasure from it, as in the aesthetic stage, but also commitment to a great cause, as in the ethical stage. But it's a cause based on a relationship between you and God. So religion B is not conveyed through assent to propositional truth, but it's based on this passionate inwardness. Kierkegaard is interested in becoming a Christian within Christendom, and in order to do that, we need to put a whole lot more emphasis on our own choices, our own decisions, on the authenticity of our own life before God, living before Him as a whole person. How does this happen, you know? How do you change from being aesthetic to being ethical to being religious and to being religious in the right way? There's really no logical argument that will take you from one to the other, because these are not just intellectual positions, these are lifestyle choices. And each one of them affects the way you live, the way you think, but everything that you do, it affects your evaluations. And if I say to my aesthetic friend, if I say, well, you shouldn't be living for pleasure alone, that's not ethically right, he might turn to me and say, who cares what's ethically right? I'm interested in what's fun. So his evaluations come from his own lifestyle, just as the ethical person's evaluations come from the ethicist lifestyle, and just like the religious person's evaluations come from the religious lifestyle. So you can't, in a way, argue a person from one lifestyle to another. There has to be a radical kind of change. And yet, you know, people do make these changes. I mean, people sometimes go to college where they're footloose and fancy free, and then 20 years later you come to a class reunion and there the guy is a CEO of a major corporation and living to be a benefactor to the poor. Well, sometimes there's no figuring out how that happens. Kierkegaard's idea is basically that it's the work of God, at least in bringing people to religion B, which is true faith. It's the work of God. It's God's grace. It's only God who can transform us from within and transform all our habits and all our evaluations, our lifestyle, our thought, everything like that. So I think Kierkegaard is actually pretty good. I mean, in Reformed theology, maybe it's a problem that Kierkegaard was a Lutheran rather than a Calvinist, but in Reformed theology, we have ways of dealing with this, you know. In Reformed theology, we have the I'll put a triangle up on the board, even though you may not be seeing it, but at the top of the triangle, the N for normative perspective, the S for situational perspective, and the E for existential perspective, and the N represents the law, and the situation represents what God has done in history, the work of Christ for us, and then the existential perspective is what the Holy Spirit does in our hearts. And I think maybe Kierkegaard's concern about traditional Christianity is that there's an awful lot of law there and an awful lot of talk about historical events, but not much focus on the existential, not much focus on what happens in the heart, not enough focus on the direct relationship between God and ourselves. And I think really that's essentially the answer to Kierkegaard's problem of how you become a Christian within Christendom. It's essentially the Lord himself who turns people from being nominal Christians to being real Christians. And of course there are ways, we're told that there are such things as means of grace that the Holy Spirit uses to draw us into a more vital relationship with Christ. There's the Word, the sacraments, prayer, and fellowship, and the church can focus on those things, but not just as a way of maintaining tradition, but as a way of nurturing believers with a very, very careful understanding of what it means to to meet the needs of people who are coming to the worship services.
The preceding program has been brought to you by RTS on iTunes U and may not be reproduced or disseminated in part or in whole, for sale or for profit, without express written consent. For more information on RTS degrees and programs, please visit us at www.rts.edu or call 1-855-854-6920.